Chapter 16. Intelligence. One evening I received the oddest note from Mr. McCarver, asking if I would bring Traddles to a meeting with him. He seemed very distressed about some mysterious problem. I read the note several times, even though I knew Mr. McCarver was a great fan of dramatic notes. I suspected something serious might be behind this one. I met with Traddles and soon learned that he had received a note from Mrs. McCarver, who feared her husband was involved in something illegal. We decided to meet with Mr. McCarver as soon as possible.
"I am crushed under the misery and cruelty of Heap," Mr. McCarver lamented. "He had sucked me into fraud, conspiracy, deception. All that is evil is Heap."
We tried to comfort Mr. McCarver as he seemed on the verge of some kind of nervous collapse.
"I must do the right thing," he insisted. "It will put me in prison. Oh, my poor darling wife, how she has suffered because of Heap. I will expose that ruffian. I must."
At that, he rushed away from us, leaving us more confused than before. This meeting was followed by a series of notes and meetings. A plan was made for ending the connection between Uriah Heap and Mr. Wickfield. But before the severance could occur, another surprising event broke in. Mr. Brigati found Emily. She had returned to London after the cruel desertion of Steerforth. She had not had the courage to go home, but Mr. Brigati found her on the streets before anything more horrible could happen. Mr. Brigati sent word that he would be taking Emily with him to start a new life in Australia, along with Mrs. Gummidge. The lone woman had made a complete change and now stood ready to help in any way she could. I was amazed to think how much people could change and how little we can guess about the journey of life. Who would have thought that Emily would go through such a painful journey, then find her way back to an uncle who loved her? Who would have thought that Mr. McCarver might find himself in the place of hero? Yet these things happened. When the day came for springing Mr. McCarver's trap, I was quite divided on what I should do. Mr. McCarver wished my aunt and Mr. Dick to be there. I did not like to leave my dear Dora alone.
"You must go, or I won't speak to you again," Dora told us sternly. "I'll be disagreeable. I'll make Jip bark at you. I shall call you cross old things if you don't go."
"Tut, Blossom," Aunt Betsy said. "How will you do without us?"
"I can stay upstairs while you are gone and look after myself quite well," she said.
And so we agreed because we couldn't imagine defying our Dora. The next day, a fine group of us headed off to our meeting. My aunt tied the strings of her bonnet with a resolute air. Traddles buttoned his coat with the determination of a man heading to war. Mr. Dick even pulled his hat on more tightly. Mr. McCarver met us on the street.
"Gentlemen and madam," he said, "good morning."
Mr. Dick greeted him with such enthusiastic handshaking that my aunt had to step in to retrieve the man's hand. "What would you have us do?" I asked Mr. McCarver.
"Wait 5 minutes for me to do a small chore," he said. "Then ask for Miss Wickfield at the office of Wickfield and Heap. I have no more to say at the present."
We waited the allotted time before heading into the offices where we found Mr. McCarver at his desk.
"How do you do, Mr. McCarver?" I said formally. "Is Miss Wickfield at home?"
He led us up the stairs and announced us in a formal voice. We found Heap alone in the upstairs rooms and greeted him stiffly. Then dear Agnes came in and Heap waved at Mr. McCarver.
"You may go."
"I think not," said Mr. McCarver.
"Go along," Heap insisted, glaring. "I will talk to you presently."
"I will talk about you now," Mr. McCarver said.
At that, he launched into a list of the illegal things he had been asked to do by Heap. To that list, he added the things Heap had done on his own without Mr. McCarver's aid.
"That won't do," Heap shouted.
"I have proof that Heap forged Mrs. McField's signature many times. He made it appear that Mr. Wickfield had lost his client's money,"
Mr. McCarver said.
"In fact, Mr. Heap placed those funds into his own accounts. I have the books for those accounts."
Heap turned very pale and rushed to a desk nearby, opening a drawer with a small key. Then he wailed to find the drawer empty.
"I have turned over all the books to Mr. Traddles. I know I may go to prison for my part in these horrible activities, but I will do so with a clear conscience and sure knowledge that I have ruined Mr. Uriah Heap."
"You stole the books," Heap shouted at Traddles.
"No," Traddles said. "I have Mr. Wickfield's legal power of attorney, and I will be looking into his affairs that I might get them in proper order."
"What do you want from me?" Heaps asked.
My aunt stalked over to Heap and glared into his face.
I want my property. I was willing to let it go when I thought it was Mr. Wickfield's heir, but I will not give my money to you, Heap.
You will turn over all the money you stole, Tradles said. You will no longer be a partner of Mr. Wickfield, and you will most likely go to jail.
This was the end of the tyranny of Mr. Uriah Heap. After this, Mr. Wickfield recovered, slowly, under the kind attention of Agnes. Mr. Micawber was arrested a few times for small debts he owed to Heap. At each arrest, one of us would pay the money and Mr. Micawber would be free again. Finally, the Micawbers thought it would be best for them to make a fresh start. They decided to travel to Australia on the exact same ship as Mr. Brigati and Emily.